The traveling exhibit Art Aids America is currently in Chicago through April. This is a groundbreaking, award-winning exhibit that showcases artistic responses to HIV/AIDS and presents artwork affected and inspired by the illness. There are over 100 pieces in the exhibit, which is at the Alpha Wood Gallery, 2401 North Halsted Street, Chicago, through April 2nd. It also includes a video documentary that talks to prominent artists who lived and worked in Chicago through the 80s during the height of the HIV/AIDS epidemic. They talk about how the artists reacted, how they processed the fact that colleagues, peers, and loved ones were dying at a record rate, and what the climate was like to not only create art but to raise awareness that artists were suffering. My guest tonight is Chicago theater stalwart David Zack. Ran the Bailiwick Theater for over 25 years, started in 1982. He put on the famed Pride shows every June. He's currently the executive director of Pride Films and Plays. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical is being produced at the Pride's Art Center, the Pride Art Center, through March 12th. He was inducted, David, into the City of Chicago's Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame in 2013. And he was here working, creating during the HIV/AIDS epidemic in the 1980s, and he joins me tonight at the big table. David, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
So let's talk about this exhibit. This is a traveling exhibit. It's a national exhibit, but its last leg is here.
Exactly. I think it's people will find it really interesting. It was very powerful on opening night when I was there with a lot of the celebrities or people who like myself had lived through that period of time. There's a lot of stuff that's very humorous. There's a lot of stuff that's very sexy. A lot of stuff that's totally devastating, just in ways that you can't even imagine. So it's really great that they brought this exhibit here because the history is so important for the community and for all of us, really. We can't really know where we're going in times of stress or times of difficulty until we really know where we've been. And so I think, especially for younger people, it's really important to get over there and see it, you know, because no one else can really experience it. You know, you can go to movies or you can read a book or whatever, and you can't really, you know, experience it the same way as you do first person. But it's really important to remind yourself of what that was like and how artists were the only ones who were really responding in a time when nothing was happening from the White House.
How much of it is documentary and how much of it is an art exhibit? Meaning, you know, how much are you sort of following the chronology of what happened in an HIV/AIDS epidemic, and how much of it is sort of celebrating the art that came around it and still is created today?
Yeah, I think it celebrates the individuals who are no longer with us, more so than being a chronological exhibit that you would see if you took an exhibit of the plague in London or something.
Yeah.
It's kind of impressionistic. And that's great. You know, so there's visual, there's video works, as you said. There's a lot of painting. There's collages. There's different sorts of things. One of the exhibits which I was very moved by was big piece of leather which came from a gym, from a place where gay men used to work out. And so it sort of looked like the Shroud of Turin because it just had the shapes of these bodies which had been there, you know, for years in and years out until the gym had nobody left to work out in. And somebody went in and bought the leather cover to the workout bench. So really beautiful, surprising, scary, shocking, you know, sort of things all at the same time.
You know, it's one of those, obviously the time in history, such a dark time in history, especially the height of it in the 80s. You know, how much of this, and we kind of talk about it at the beginning, I mean, how much of it is, you think of all of the art that evokes emotion, and it really has to do with people who are no longer with us.
Right.
And how fast, and talks about in that documentary I watched, just how fast it came up on the Chicago arts community. But how much of it is recognizing that, and then also, you know, taking joy from the art that was created from the people that may no longer be with us.
Yeah, I think that was part of what we did in the theater. You know, the theater was a great place to bring people together to educate people because there were not a lot of places where you could find out what was going on. It was a place for people to mourn. It was a place for community. And it was really, really difficult because it felt like we would do an opening night and then a few days later do another memorial service for another member of the community. And it all was happening so fast that you would make sure that you got the gay papers every week because you needed to make sure you checked the obituaries to see who you know who had passed that week without ever really knowing that people were sick or anything, all of a sudden they would just be gone. And so the obituaries for Windy City Times, the gay papers of the Times, were just these huge, you know, relatively huge sections of paragraphs about people who you just saw the week before, you know, at Treasure Island or something, and all of a sudden they're gone. So it was a really difficult time for all of us. I never thought I'd be 40. I never thought I would know anyone who is 40. I just assumed that the whole group of us who are working were going to be you know, gone. And so that drives a different sort of thing. You just grieved. I was grieving, and I just threw everything into my work and just sort of said, well, there's no worry. You know, we don't have to worry about the future. Let's just do the important stuff. Let's do the art. Let's do the plays. Let's get people in here and let's communicate with people. And that's a great power. It's a great fury.
David Zak is a longtime theater artist here in Chicago. He is right now the executive director of Pride Films and Plays, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. The musical is being produced at the Pride Arts Center through March 12th. He's also a member of Chicago's Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame 2013. We're talking about the Art AIDS America exhibit, which is currently on display at the Alpha Wood Gallery, 2401 North Halsted Street through April 2nd. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. David Zak, we'll go back to the 80s with David Zak here on The Download. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're talking about the traveling exhibit Art AIDS America, which is currently in Chicago through April. My guest tonight, David Zak. He is a Chicago theater artist. He ran the Bailiwick Theater for over 25 years, I think it was 27 years or so. Currently the executive director of Pride Films and Plays, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, on stage, the musical, being produced at the Pride Arts Center through March 12th. David Zak, of course, in the City of Chicago's Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame. He was inducted in 2013. You came to Chicago, I mean, or at least you came to the Chicago art scene in the early 80s.
Yeah, I grew up in Lisle, so my family's roots are here, and I was teaching in the suburbs, actually, at the same the high school that I went to, and then decided that really what I want to be doing is working as a theater artist. So I was happy to have supportive family and friends. As one of my friends has said, oh, you've never had a job. You've always had your passion.
And what did you do? You just came to Chicago, started work, started acting?
Yeah, I schlepped flowers. I was working as a delivery boy in a plant shop, so I met lots of people on Lakeshore Drive, and I would write their addresses down and send them requests for money. And that was good, the beginning of the fundraising part of it. But after a few years, a group of artists got together to found Bailiwick, and that was the beginning of sort of a more permanent place for me.
For you, I mean, tying it together, I mean, this would be the early 80s. Talk about the art scene here, I mean, at least from the theater standpoint.
Yeah, the theaters were just sort of the beginning, the explosion of Steppenwolf would have been, you know, 5 or 6 years old. There was a lot of activity happening. In fact, Bailiwick eventually moved into a great space at Belmont and Broadway. That was the Jane Addams Hull House, which I think a lot of people remember very fondly as a place for the Hull House players. And it was there while we were in that building that we did a consultancy with the Kellogg Community Service Group of Northwestern, who said, you know, look, you're in the heart of this community. Why aren't you doing programming that will reach it? Because nobody else is. And you're doing programming like, you know, we were doing classics and continue to do Animal Farm and all that sort of stuff as well. But that was the beginning of the Pride series and the play that we saw at the exhibit, which is mentioned, which is called Jerker. And that was really a powerful explosion for the community to finally see their lives reflected on stage.
And this was a play. This was later in the 80s. Let's stay early on. When you were a theater artist and you were in Chicago and you're working at the Bailiwick, Belmont and Broadway, talk about when the arts community started to recognize that there was
an issue. I think, you know, there was a lot of stuff happening in New York that was very confusing for everyone. There were a lot of really high-profile deaths. There were a lot of high-profile people who were passing. And the frustration was just the attitude of the government, as captured in The Normal Heart, the great works of Larry Kramer. You know, there just wasn't a way for people to really understand what was happening or how to prevent it. And so I think people are really angry about that period of time when so many lives could have been saved if people would have just told the truth and not tried to put some sort of weird, you know, spin on on what, you know, how AIDS was transmitted or any of that sort of stuff. So I think there was a lot of frustration, there was a lot of anger, and I think the artists were then able to channel that through Danny Sotomayor's cartoons, people who were writing various, you know, pieces of protest work, and eventually works for the stage. And what's great about the theater is can respond very quickly, unlike television or movies, which take years to get produced. Theater artists can see that there's something happening now, and they can write a play that can be ready and, you know, in a couple months, and you can get it up before an audience really quickly. And that still is a way in which art and theater artists impact the discussion of cultural life in Chicago.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, as we talk about the idea of having something so destructive like HIV, AIDS in a community, in the gay and lesbian community, but also in the arts community, and how you were able to create art out of it. When you think back to that time, do you think that you were... as an artist, you were prolific, that you had more sort of artistic output because of the fact that there was this thing that was bringing people together?
I think so. I think we had that opportunity because we had a great space. We had a great location. We had an audience that was literally right outside our door. It wasn't as if we had to look for people. So Jerker, you would just open the doors to the theater and the line would be around the block because people just had not experienced anything like this. I mean, it was funny, it was sexy, it was a really great, initially a radio play, but it just had this ending, which was clearly, you know, clearly tragic. And just
talk about it. It was Robert Chesney, is that?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Robert Chesley. Yeah, it just is a great play still. We might be doing a reading of it later this year as part of an anniversary project we're working on. But it just is a series of phone calls between two men. And so it was back in that day when people actually talked to each other when they were flirting, not the app days that we are in now where you just see pictures. And so you really see these two strangers. They don't really know anything about each other, really. They never meet in person. There's a phone call. It's sort of a fantasy where one guy sort of talks about what they could be like, this two princes who run naked through the woods and enjoy life together. And eventually the phone calls stop. So one guy keeps calling and there's an answering machine, and the second call, another answering machine, the third call, an answering machine, the fourth call, the line's been disconnected, and that's the end of the story. You don't know what happened, although, of course, we know what happened. You know, it's that period when people were just disappearing.
Yeah.
People were just...
Why do you think that there were lines around the corner?
Oh, because people didn't have a place to talk to each other yet. There wasn't that sense of community. We didn't have Glee. We didn't have, you know, Riverdale. There weren't any TV shows or, you know, we didn't grow up with gay characters on television or in the movies at all. So it was really great to see gay lives on stage, and Bailiwick was one of the first places that people could go and see those lives expressed, sometimes joyfully, sometimes, you know, full of humor, sometimes through musicals, but oftentimes through dramas that were just really painful to sit through. So a lot of it was really, really great. There's a wonderful play from Canada called Flesh and Blood, in which you know, has a very tragic ending. And I just remember night after night, I remember Essie Cupp sitting there one night from the old days, and, you know, the house lights would come on at the end and people would just sit there. There was no applause. You know, everyone was just devastated, because we had shared this artistic experience, yeah, which was so moving, and you just, wow, you just, you know.
And the exhibit goes through this, and like I said, I've been talking about it, go up to the Alphawood Gallery, which is at 2401 North Halsted Street, but it does go about not just the devastation that the HIV/AIDS epidemic had on the arts community, but how fast it was.
Right.
That this was something that was nothing gradual about it. The idea that artists that were working together, collaborating on things, just weren't there the next day.
Right.
And you talked about you pick up the Windy City Times and you look at the obit, and there's people that you were talking to a week ago.
Right. People you would be in planning for, in our case, planning to direct productions or be in productions, and you'd sort of go, "What happened to so and so?" And oh, didn't you hear? And, you know, other people were doing other things. Other people were doing fundraising. Other people were doing, you know, really important organizational things. So sometimes I felt like, because I was sort of entrenched in the artistic, you know, day-to-day of the getting the show on up, I didn't do as much as other people did, you know, in terms of being able to start the foundations and start some of the structural things that really, really helped people as well.
And that came out of the epidemic.
Absolutely.
For sure. I mean, Chicago has such a great history of so many groups that came together to bring the community together. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up here after the news. The exhibit is called Art Aids America. It's a national exhibit that's last leg is here in Chicago. It's at the Alpha Wood Gallery, 2401 North Halsted Street. We're talking to David Zack. He used to run the Bailiwick Theater. He also did the Pride shows, the Pride series at the Bailiwick. He also currently is the executive director of Pride Films and Plays, and he is in the Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame, inducted in 2013. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll continue the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. The traveling exhibit Art Aids America is currently in Chicago at the Alpha Wood Gallery, 2401 North Halsted Street, through April 2nd. It's a great exhibit that showcases artistic responses to HIV/AIDS and presents the artwork that was affected and inspired by the disease. In studio with me, David Zack. He ran the Bailiwick Theater for over 25 years here in Chicago. He's in the Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame here in Chicago, and he also is the executive director of Pride Films and Plays, which Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical, is on stage at Pride Art Center, and through March 12th. David, we were talking about, you know, just the reaction from the arts community to the AIDS epidemic in the 80s. You know, it's fascinating because the big chunk of this exhibit is about the artists that were able to tell the stories that weren't being told. I mean, the epidemic, one of the big things was, like you said, there was a lot of misinformation. The government sort of, you know, did a lot of misdirection on what was causing this and who was affected by it. And it was artists at the time, through paintings, through photography, through political cartoons, that really raised awareness and painted a picture, no pun intended, of what was happening. And theater had a part of that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting because the intensity of it was so strong. So for my personal life, the first person who I loved died, you know, of AIDS, and it was part of that terrible tension of, you know, you're grieving, you're working, you're putting everything into what you have on the stage, and it was hard. It was more than hard. It was devastating. It was crazy. But as I said, you just never thought there was a way out. It was just this rabbit hole that was really, really a cycle that was really, really, really dark period, I would say, for a lot of us. So you have really great works that you know, Steve Scott at the Goodman was working on, or Nick Patrika is a Chicago playwright who wrote wonderful things. And the initial part of it was sorrow, and the initial part of it was education. And then you got to a point where people realized, well, you could live with HIV. So Bailiwick did O Holy Allen Ginsberg, which is the first play about gay marriage, you know, early on, right at that same point where people were thinking, great, how do we stay alive? And now you're putting this gay marriage play on, which is totally unimaginable to us. But for Nick, who's a genius and is, you know, still working and still writing in Chicago, you know, it was his vision of the future. This is what he thought it could be, and it was great. We took it to Dublin. You know, it's really great.
It's interesting because, especially when it comes to the when people, you know, when gays were in family structures that were very like immigrant families, people come from different places, and there would be an artist here in Chicago who would, you know, get diagnosed with HIV, have AIDS, and the family didn't know what to do.
Right.
And the family would cut off communication, and because they had misinformation as well. Doctors had misinformation at some points, and they would almost isolate.
Mm-hmm.
And you would never really understand or get a picture of what was happening. And it was artists that would come in with photography, like I talked about, or paintings that would give people a glimpse into private situations, death.
Right.
That we were never seeing before.
Right. And for us, you know, we didn't have emails. We didn't, you know, it wasn't the instant communication that you had today. People would literally write a play, put it in the mail, you know, send it across country to a place they'd never been because they knew that you might have an affinity to doing a work like that. Personal stories. I can't tell you the number of plays I read that were just, you know, just so powerful. Here's the story of my partner. Here's the story of my relationship, my marriage, my family, just, you know, devastating stories about kids getting thrown out of their house or people getting disowned or whatever. And it was really a very difficult time to reach each other. You know, we read the New York Times. We sort of had a sense of what was going on. But, you know, reaching people in different cities was difficult. So amazing that we communicated as well as we did back in that period. And amazing that so much of what we created is still being, you know, is still around to have been to document this period, because it'll be totally different now. People can go online and figure out what it is, what the disease is, what the symptoms, you know, what the medications
as an artist
are.
Community, did you feel that need to document the what was happening?
Well, we tried as
for
much
history,
best as we
for
could.
For posterity.
Yeah, sure. You just feel like you want to leave. You want to be remembered. You want to have people say, you know, we were here. And that's why I think it's really important for young people to come in and see this exhibit. It's free, runs for a couple more weeks, and it's a really, you know, people I think will enjoy it in a weird way. It's satisfying, if that makes sense.
There's a lot in the exhibit that's not just about, you know, the negative impact of and the destruction and despair as we've been talking about, but a lot about the political movement. I mean, there's something to be said about how the AIDS epidemic, there was this movement in the gay community that said if you know, we can't count on the politicians in the city hall or downstate or even in the White House to figure this out, we're going to step up and do this. You mentioned Danny. I mean, the idea of these the political cartoons that were saying something about the political times. There's a way that the gay community stepped up and got a political voice.
Absolutely. And there are great pieces on the Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame website that you can read about the various people who really stood up and were captains of the various movements of not only the arts, but also just the demonstrations, the politics, who was moving forward, who was moving backwards. You know, people got elected into the office who we thought were going to be great standard bearers. Not all those people delivered on what they promised. But that's part of life, isn't it? So it's really been an interesting. It's been an interesting time to. This exhibit is a great way to look back at this time and realize how many different things were happening at the same time.
When you look back, and it's you know to that time, you know, does it? You know, you were an artistic person. You worked at Bailiwick. You had success, and you had success in the 90s and 2000s, 2010s. Does the AIDS epidemic and what happened in the 80s just cloud that time, that decade for you, or is there more?
I think there's more. You know, I think in terms of what I said before, I never thought I would live to be, you know, more than 40 or know anybody over 40. You know, now I'm 61. You know, I've been married for 25, 27 years. I should get that number right before my husband listens to this. You know, and so you have that sense of there can be life after this. And so I think that was a place that many people were able to get to, and people were flabbergasted, not knowing why, you know, person X lived and person Y died. Yeah. You know,
just survivor's guilt, as it was said in the
yeah, it was yeah. Totally random. Person, you know, Z, who had sex with 40 million people, and person, you know, would be fine, and person, you know, whatever, who had never slept with a person other than his husband was taken away. So still there's that frustration about the disease and you know, how it all works and why it all works. So there was a lot of frustration, a lot of anger about that. But then I think at some point people realized that you could make it through. And that's what I think some of the Dustin Lance Black series, which is starting tonight, right, is about, is that sense of when we rise, when we go through these troubling times, whether they're racial times or anti-Semitic times, if we stick together and bond together, we can make it through and defeat the ignorance or defeat the forces of complacency, which are trying to pretend that something, you know, like the Reagans were, you know, just trying to pretend that this wasn't an issue. And it was dumb because Nancy Reagan had all these gay friends and, you know, they had all their Hollywood connections. It's really infuriating that they, you know, personally were, I think, involved and responsible for a lot of the miseducation, or as you call it, misdirection of what was
happening.
You know,
it's interesting because with the Art AIDS exhibit that's the national tour, When We Rise on ABC, there seems to be a resurgence in telling the stories of the LGBT community. Why do you think that is? I mean, what do you think? And has a story been told in the right way? I mean, it feels like it's a story I know, my generation knows. Has it been told in the right way?
I think it's being told, for the most part, in the right way. You know, there was a movie, a Stonewall movie, a couple years ago, maybe the summer before last, that was not good, you know, because it focused on a kid from Kansas, and he was cute and handsome, and, you know, it was, it had nothing really, almost nothing to do with Stonewall, but it was called Stonewall, and everybody went out to see it. So I think it's good that you can make mistakes as an artist. You can make mistakes in how you tell the story. You know, none of us are creating the definitive AIDS play or the definitive AIDS movie. But what I do think is that art changes people's lives now because of the exposure to it. So the kids who grew up on Glee, or the kids who are growing up on Riverdale, or are watching every television show which has a gay and lesbian character, and sometimes, you know, how to get away with murder, and you're like, whoa, what, that's interesting on channel, you know, whatever, or Fox, you know, the big gay love scene comes up in the middle of a Fox TV show. That's crucial, and we have to keep understanding that we just want our stories told like everybody else's stories are told. But if they're told, then people come of age realizing that diversity is good and history is important, and we can't circle back to a point where we're just...
There's a lot talked about in the exhibit just about the sort of the first responders of artists.
Right.
Artists who suffered or died from HIV/AIDS or the work that honored them. And then there's also talk about the second generation, a third generation, and how HIV/AIDS is viewed through the artists who either lived through it, maybe living with HIV, or, you know, had just, you know, it's part of their understanding of their history. Talk about the difference. I mean, as you've been an artist that has been in all those generations, do you see the different artists from different generations viewing and being inspired by what happened in the 80s differently?
I think it's been an interesting progression for people to get. You know, not many people have been through those different decades, and so I feel happy and fortunate that I've been able to continue working in different decades to tell stories from those different decades. And I think you know, too many people only had one or the other. You know, they were in that first group and they left, and you wonder, well, what else could they have created? Michael Bennett, who created Chorus Line. You know, what else could he have done? You know, there's just so many people like that that you just think, this is, you know, what a loss that you know, that single loss was, but so many other people like that. So I think it's interesting that the people who did go through all that, you know, for the most part, didn't respond in a different way. You know, there's not a really funny, charming Larry Kramer play. You know, the Larry Kramer plays are all furious and you know, and fury. Terrence McNally, on the other hand, is one of those guys who's lasted through the decades, and so his plays are much more genteel. You know, they never were as angry as Larry's, but they have a certain wisdom because he is, you know, one of the smartest guys around and just has lived through it all and really puts that on the page, whether it's a musical or a play.
You mentioned Roberts played Jerker, mm-hmm. and the idea that it may get a reading this year, and it might be something that could be back on stage. What's that mean to you? What's it mean to you that a piece that was made in 1989 for a sole purpose to illuminate an issue that Chicago really hadn't grappled with yet?
Well, and I don't think Robert Chesley didn't really write it that way. It was a radio play that was on the air in San Francisco, and people heard it. And again, because it's phone calls, you were able to use your imagination, and it really caught fire with people. So I think he was probably, you know, he had no idea how much of an impact that play would have because he was gone shortly thereafter, with only maybe five or six plays under his belt at that point,
really?
At the time he died.
What does it mean to you?
I think it's great. I think it's exciting. It'll be, you know, it's important. I think it will be interesting to see what the response is for everybody, for the young people who don't know what it was really like, and for the older generation who sat through it. So those make me happy when you can get different types of people. And the work that Pride Films and Plays does is very much, you know, we don't just play to a gay audience. We feel like our stories are important, but they're important for everybody. It's not when you go to Priscilla, it's just old people, suburban people, you know, kids, teenagers, drag queens. It's great because it's just this mix of guys in ties and guys in heels. And you just go, this is what life should be like all the time. Why do we put up such barriers?
For, you know, in the video documentary that accompanies the exhibit, the Art AIDS America exhibit, which is up at Alpha Wood Gallery, you have a line in there that you say, this is what, you know, you want people to know, this is what this was like, and you need to learn from this so it doesn't happen again. Do you feel that younger generations in the LGBT community, or younger generations of Americans, or I'd say globally, are aware of what happened to the gay community in the 80s?
I think they're aware in a general sense, but I don't think they have the specific sense that we would want them to have. I think they don't really understand the price that was paid, how hard the struggle was, how difficult it was, how many people are lost. I'm not Jewish, so I can't imagine, you know, how that community feels about the sense that the Holocaust can be totally, you know, the people can claim it was just invented or any of that sort of stuff. You know, there's got to be the same sort of frustration that you can't believe that people don't want to know how it happened. And you know, people haven't seen Schindler's Right. List and all that sort Right. of stuff. So I think it's important that if you are anybody who has any interest, you know, if you're a teacher or a student or anybody who can work with young people, if you have kids of your own, or if you're, you know, worried about your own students or children or what their sexual identity is going to be, go to this exhibit and see something which is really important. And it's only a sliver. You know, it's not like it's going to take you 4 days to get through the exhibit.
And
it's small.
And it's free.
And it's intense and it's free. And you might come away going, I have a lot of questions, but that there's a lot of research that they put online, which can give you more information than you can get at the time that you're
this exhibit is truly about telling the stories of those who lost their lives and those artists that were inspired by something that was so tragic. When a younger generation comes up, they may know it, just like, you know, it's taught in the schools, not unlike the Holocaust, like you mentioned. Are they understanding what HIV/AIDS means or what it meant to a community like yours in the 80s? I mean, because it's changed in the way that's still a terrible, terrible virus and disease, but it's taken on a different feel.
Right. Yeah, I think I can't speak obviously for the younger generation. I sometimes feel like they think it's manageable, and so therefore not a burden or not anything to be ashamed of. And there's, you know, I understand that. I understand that sense. It's hard, you know, having gone through all the struggles that we went through. And I know a lot of people who are older than myself get furious, you know, at the ignorance or the stubbornness of people who should have known better, in the same way, because we didn't know better, that this generation should have known better and doesn't or didn't. But in any case, that's the bigger question is, how do we work together to get to the point where, you know, the disease can be wiped out, not lived with or not said, oh, this is part of life, because it's a problem here, but it's, you know, devastating around the world. So you just can't ignore it and just say, let's just go out for cocktails and worry about it later.
The traveling national exhibit, Art AIDS America, is currently in Chicago through April 2nd. It's at the Alpha Wood Gallery, 2401 North Halsted Street. Look it up. It's free. My guest tonight, Chicago's theater artist David Zack. He ran the Bailiwick Theater for over 25 years. He put on the famed Pride series every June. He also currently is the executive director of Pride Films and Plays. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert is the musical being produced at Pride Arts Center through March 12th. It's also in the city of Chicago's Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame. David, thanks so much for sharing your story and talking tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.